Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay with the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And if you have any comments or you have any questions that you would like to call in with tonight, we'd be more than happy to take your call. I'll give you our call-in number. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I'll bring that on again. Or I'll repeat that again. 646-716-4893. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Blaine. I'm doing great. Enjoying the fall colors, the leaves, and just it's one of my favorite times of year and getting to enjoy that in the mountains. I love it. So, all is well in my world.
Are the leaves turning color there?
Oh, they're beautiful. They're just so beautiful. And I guess it's why I've been away so long. I don't get to spend this time of year here very often. It's been many years since I've got to be here this time of year. So, of course, to me, the colors are just so vibrant this time of year. They're just beautiful, yeah, orange, red, yellow, all the colors, beautiful.
Yeah, I guess it's such a contrast from Florida to Kentucky.
Absolutely. This is home to me, so always
mm-hmm.
home, always.
And I think in Florida, the leaves don't even change, right?
No, I call it the uniseason. It's one season, hot, all year
mm-hmm.
long. You know, and winter happens over the, everyone says, oh, we have winter. Yeah, it happens over the weekend. You might have one cold weekend. You know, we can pull the sweater out.
Although I do think the leaves change in Florida from green to brown as they're burning.
Yeah. As they burn.
They're drying out in the sun there, right?
Awesome. You got it, dear. That's the way it goes. Because I'm in South Florida. North Florida, you can see us, you know, a vague change. But I'm in South Florida. So it's the uniseason.
Yes, it's hot all year round.
Yeah,
and it's either hot or hotter, right?
Yeah, sometimes you get the two seasons, hot and hotter. So, you know, either or.
Well, I'm here with beautiful weather in Philadelphia, and we're having a week with 70s all week long, so that's my kind of weather.
Mm-hmm.
Low 70s, late 60s, you know, enjoying that fall weather before that change is over.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, first of all, thank all of our listeners who, you know, listen to this show every week, because we know there's several thousand of you from the counts that we get. And it's really inspirational to get letters from you at bondk@AOL. Misty and I really appreciate your support, and that's why we do this show every week, because we know it's important for you to have something to hold on to touch base with, and to feel supported with. And we're more than happy to keep that support going. I wanted to mention also that we're going to be having our weekend healing in Texas. It'll be March 2nd and 3rd. So if anyone who's listening be interested in joining me and some really dynamic, wonderful women, including Wendy, who's our guest on the show every few months with her beautiful words,
mm-hmm.
and some of our other wonderful women, Grace, and also, you know, Debbie and Patsy Ray, please, you know, just write to me at bondk@AOL, and I'll keep you in touch with you and send you the details as we're getting closer to that time. But I'm really looking forward to it. We had a wonderful meeting last year in Houston, and we're going to be staying at the same resort. It's a wonderful place to stay, very inexpensive, but really gorgeous. And I'm looking forward to spending a few days down there with our wonderful women. So once again, if you'd like to join me, please write to me, bondk@AOL.com, for the details. Also, for those women who don't get my newsletter, if you'd like to be on my mailing list, just write to me, and I'll be more than happy to send you my monthly newsletters. You know, this month I featured one of our women. I'm just so impressed with her work, Misty. And her name is Maureen Tillman.
Mm-hmm.
And Maureen designed the cover of Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Part 2. You know, she did such a beautiful job on that.
I remember
and she
that.
Has a website. Isn't it beautiful?
Beautiful.
And she has a website on Etsy, which is a website for people who do creative arts like you, Misty. Do you have a website
there?
Wonderful.
I don't. I keep I keep tinkering with that idea, and I was just, it's funny you say that. I keep thinking of that today because being a therapist, you know, artwork is my therapy, and I keep thinking about that. And Etsy's a wonderful, it's a safe site to buy things off of. So if she's on there, I'd encourage your listeners to get on there and support her. She's selling things. It's a great site. Wonderful.
Yes, and now she started making beautiful healing jewelry that I announced in the newsletter. And she's selling it on her website. Did you have a chance to take a look at it yet?
I'll send you the link. I have to look at that.
Yeah, I'll send you the link because I'm looking at her artwork right now. And, you know, these words are just so beautiful. And each piece of jewelry is handmade and, you know, personalized. But there's beautiful healing pictures on there with words such as, and I'll give you some examples of what they are. There's pictures, of course, of they're all women, but, you know, some of them have the words like awaken, freedom, you know, all healing kinds of words, adventure, worth, soar, S-O-A-R, that kind of soar. And each one is individually made, and they're just beautiful. So if you didn't see them in the newsletter and you would like to see the site, just send me a note, and I'll be happy to send it out to you. And if any of our other, you know, members do artwork and you would like to share it, I'm more than happy to, you know, have you send it to me and be happy to publicize it for you because I think we all have to help each other. You know, that's partially what support's about, right? So, anyway, but moving on for tonight, what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about a subject that just keeps coming up and Misty, you know, you're a therapist, so I thought it'd be really great to have your insight on this, and I found some good articles. You know, women who come to us, you know, and I have, I would say about 30% of the women who come to me, you know, feel very torn because they don't have any proof and they don't have any evidence. You know, they just have nothing except their own gut feeling. You know, some other women have at least, you know, they find porno on the screen. Even if they don't have other kinds of concrete proof, at least they have something to go on. But these other women are basically acting on their instincts, and, you know, they feel very torn because they don't have any proof that their husbands are gay. And I keep telling them that you really don't need any proof. I mean, if you're writing to me to start with, there must be something wrong that's making you feel that. Why would you think your husband's gay instead of cheating with a woman? You know, I think it's a totally different feeling of infidelity in both of those situations. So I don't think that women who have husbands who are straight and cheat really come to me. You know, they don't think the reason that their husbands are not being, you know, not affectionate towards them. For some reason, gay just isn't one of the reasons. So by the time a woman comes to me or to you, you know, and they think that or they suspect this, I feel that they really have to go with their instincts. But unfortunately, some women just feel so torn. And, you know, here's the question they keep asking over and over again. What if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? Okay, so I say to that, what if you are wrong? I mean, if you're not happy in your marriage, does it really matter? And then they come back and they say, well, he's really a nice guy. In every other way, he's really nice. We're good friends. But there's just no intimacy there. There's just no affection there. And, of course, there's no sex there, but, you know, they say, but in every other way, he's really a nice guy. But are you happy in your marriage? Well, not really, okay, because it's not the kind of marriage that women dream of or women want to have or that we see on the screen. But, you know, they just feel so, you know, stuck to ever have to make a decision. So how do you deal with that, Misty?
Well, I think it depends on each person, you know, taking into account their circumstances. And what comes to mind first, I'm going to use myself as an example. That was me many years ago. I didn't have proof. That kept gnawing in my mind, And the root and the base of that was because of some of the religious reasons I was taught growing up. And, you know, that's very strong. You know, that's rooted strong into our, I mean, it was in my DNA, I'm telling you, it was cellular by the time, you know, that belief pattern was embedded very strong in me. But, you know, I just kept looking for proof, and I stayed 10 years. And it was, I'm going to be very honest, 9 years and 300 and some odd days too long because I should have, I knew something was wrong as soon as I married him. My intuition was just trying to scream at me to tell me something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, I didn't know what it was, but I knew something was wrong because I was very naive, especially in the sexual department. And anyway, when someone comes to me, I think of myself, especially if they've got, you know, the religious issue background, you know, I need proof for divorce. And you know what I tell people in those circumstances is, one, find some professional help. You know, find someone that you're comfortable talking with, and find someone that knows enough about a spiritual belief system that you're comfortable with, or you can develop your own relationship with God. That's what I did. That's how I came to terms with the divorce. That's how I came to terms with realizing I cannot live like this anymore. I am dying. I'm dying on the inside. This is a slow form of suicide because I'm killing myself by staying because the relationship was so abusive. Him being gay was almost the least of our issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so, so, so abusive. And I finally developed my own relationship with God and come to terms with things. So that's one route.
Can I just ask you a question? You know, we've talked a lot about your past marriage with your ex-husband and about, you know, the domestic violence that was involved on top of the gay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know you always say that gay is like the least issue because there were so many more. But, I mean, now that you're out of the situation for a long time and if you kind of like step back and look at it, in your opinion, do you think there would have been that kind of violence if he weren't gay? Or do you think
if he
gay was making him so angry and frustrated, this is the way he reacted?
I think that's a wonderful, wonderful question. I've asked myself that so many times. Here's what I think. I think possibly he was so frustrated that he hated himself. I think it was self-anger towards himself.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. And I think he had to have some way to vent that out. And he would just have intermittent, explosive anger. I mean, it was explosive. And why I say that was the least of our issues is because, I mean, I was literally some days in fear of my life. I mean, it was survival some days. And I'm not trying to discount, you know, the pain you go through when a straight person's married to a gay person. I mean, some days I was literally struggling for my life. But I was still there. Didn't have enough sense to leave and didn't have enough sense to realize how dangerous it was. But I think as time went on, he hated himself more. I think he loved me as much as he could. I know he would have changed himself if he would have had a choice. And I think he stayed in that pattern so long. I'm quite sure that whoever he is with now, he is probably abusive with too, because I would think that's the relationship style he has developed.
Yeah, that's
what
I wanted to know. Do you think it would
be
any different with a man than he is with you?
Not now, I don't, because I you know, unless he's really come to terms with that and worked on that professionally, I would say he's running a very similar pattern, because, you know, professionally speaking, people usually do run a similar pattern if they've not worked on it. And I don't know if he worked on it. I hope he has for him and his partner. I do know he does have a partner. And I really hope he has, because, I mean, that's no way to live. It really isn't, with that anger and all that rage. It's fearful. It's dangerous. It can just get explosive. And once you develop that, that's your style. You know, that's how you react to things. When you get mad, you get upset, you get angry. And it may have different tones to it where he's able to, you know, be a little more authentic in who he is. So hopefully that has helped. But I think he had rage anyway. You know, I think he had rage.
You know, I think
the rage was already there. I mean, I think
that's
being gay and fighting it.
And, you know, I want women to understand this also, because I think this is such a big factor, that when you're married to someone who is physically abusive, it doesn't start out that way in most cases. I would say in 95% of the cases. It's not like when you're dating them or courting them that the abuse really begins. Would you say that's true?
I'm going to use myself as an example. some cases, it starts out early on in dating. I've worked with women early on in dating, that's even with straight couples. Myself, there was no abuse. And one time he got really angry at me. It was about a week before we got married, and he and I both were just so anxious and on edge because so many things, so many deadlines coming at us. You know, like one thing wasn't being shipped, another thing was delayed. This was because we had a huge wedding. And I took it as stress because, I mean, I was snapping at him too. It was both of us. And so I really looked over it. Looking back now, it was over the top. I should have taken that as a huge red flag. But that was the only indication of any anger I had out. I've seen him for 2 years. He never exploded on me. He never had the rage. Never.
And I think that's very typical of most, you know, abusive types of behaviors in men. You know, they don't really start up until they feel they have you where they want you. You know, until you're so in love with them or so tangled in with them. And, you know, they're on their very, very best behavior in the beginning. You know, they really work their hardest to keep those behaviors away from you because then you'll reject them. So I think women have to understand that domestic violence, for the most part, does not start prior to the time you say, I do. Because then I would have to really, you know, once again, think there are other issues if women have been, you know, beaten or hit by men, and then they go ahead and marry them anyway.
Right.
You know, but
right.
I'm sure that happens, but I think it happens more frequently the other way, where you're in the relationship and then it, you know, begins. But what I'm thinking about is that with your ex-husband, that potential for physical violence must have always been there. And
absolutely.
Would probably be done with whoever he's with, whatever man he's with.
I
because other
so.
Men
I
get
think.
Angry, but they don't, you know, go to the point of domestic violence. They'll do emotional right. abuse.
Anger is a healthy emotion. That's what I tell people. Anger is a healthy emotion. It's what you do with it that makes it unhealthy. My ex really took it to a horrible degree of being unhealthy and dangerous to the point of almost being lethal at times. His potential for the rage and anger was always there, whether he was gay or not. That was there. That was underlying. And
right.
him being in the situation, being married to me, looking back, he hated being gay. I know he did. It's really sad. You know, hated what he was and wanted to be straight, trying to be straight. And it was just horrible. He was just caught in this horrible chaos of his own world. And it was just so much frustration and trying to keep up with the different lies of where he was, what he was doing, and me catching on to different things. And it was just really sad. But unfortunately, the rage really exploded during our relationship. And hopefully he got a handle on it, because if not, I'm sure he's still continuing it, whether he be with a man or with a woman, because that's his relationship style, unfortunately. Unless he's worked on it, and I truly hope he's worked on it. But, you know, back to, you know, women not knowing. So to answer that, you know, just a little bit differently as well, in my case, in terms of religious reasons, I say find someone professionally that can help you that's well-versed in spirituality, not necessarily religion, but spirituality, and develop your own relationship with God. Go from there. And then you have other women that just beat themselves up thinking, like what you said, well, you know, he's a good man. We've had good times together. All this other stuff is wonderful, but we don't have, you know, the intimacy. We don't have, you know, the sexual relationship. And those things are so important. You know, a gay man married to a straight woman, we oftentimes discount those. And that's a very, very important component of a healthy relationship. So I say seek professional help so you can realize how important that those components in that relationship is. And if you're not, if that's not healthy, that's a very unbalanced relationship. It's going to fall apart. And by falling apart, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get divorced or split. But you're not going to be happy. It's going to be very unbalanced. It's not going to be fair. And it's just a setup for misery. And with the proof, you know, another very simple way, and we've stated this so many times, just ask yourself, you know, are you happy? Whether they're gay or not, are you happy? Life's too short to be so unhappy. You know,
I agree.
Really,
and, you know, I always tell women, we're talking about it in the chat room tonight, that every, you know, I tell women, like, every minute becomes an hour, every hour becomes a day, every day becomes a month, and a month becomes a year. And before you turn around, you know, another year has gone by, and you've lost it. You can never get this time back.
No.
But I found a really good article, and it doesn't refer to women with gay men, just in general. Why do women stay in bad relationships?
And you know what? I'd like to point one thing out before
sure.
you mention that. Not only does that minute turn into an hour, and that hour turn into, you know, days and so forth that you're married to that person, that time's gone. Also take into account the time that's gone that it takes to heal.
Because it's going to become a lifetime, not just, you know, a short time.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I was in my marriage for 10 years, and let me tell you, I did not heal overnight. It was a long time before I stepped into another relationship.
Right.
And so I just stepped back. So, you know, you can't just say, okay, well, I'm going to find somebody right now. I mean, it's not only taking that part of your life away, you know, the healing part is
mm-hmm.
a lot of work. The hard work. So not only
exactly.
you know, add that to that, and it's a lot of time to heal from trauma like that.
Mhm. And the longer you've been there, the longer it takes to heal.
Absolutely.
Because I always say there's a lot of residual damage after these relationships. You know, it's a lack of your self-esteem, a lack of your sexual esteem, a lack of your trust. And even though some women run out and they have sex, that doesn't mean they don't have a lack of sexual esteem. You know, once that initial sex is over, you know, they find themselves just as alone as ever before. And, you know, they still have to start rebuilding their lives and rebuilding who they are.
Yep.
So that's why I always tell women, you know, like any other kind of recovery, you know, your first year, don't get entrenched in emotional relationships because you're so vulnerable. And there are all kinds of predators out there waiting for you. You know,
mm-hmm.
they want to get you. And I'm not talking about just gay ones. I'm talking about straight ones.
Mm-hmm.
But we have women who have multiple marriages to gay men because, you know, we have the straight gay man, you know, who will never admit he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk away from him, he's going to remarry again. And he's going to remarry someone who's vulnerable like you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really, like I say, a self-fulfilling prophecy in many ways. But this article I kind of liked, and I'll ask your opinion on the points here. It says, why do women stay in bad relationships? And it says, a woman can completely ruin her life by not doing anything to get out of a dead-end relationship. Women don't forget good times of any relationship, and they store the memories in their hearts. It is these memories that at times cause them to turn a blind eye when the relationship turns sour. They hold on to these memories, hoping things will get better or go back to the way things used to be. They have such strong faith and hope in even awful situations. Women are groomed from childhood to become mothers, wives, and to be responsible even for other people's lives. Unfortunately, there is little or no training in self-esteem, being single and content, and just being a total person. The foundation of anything is important because that is what will sustain the building or, better still, the individual. A weak foundation always causes problems later on in life. To fix a weak foundation, you have to break down the building and start to rebuild. Reinforcement may be insufficient because it may only solve the problem temporarily. It is vital that one looks at how they are groomed into life. If you are groomed to know that for your life to be complete, you need to find a man, just know you have it all wrong. When you don't find one, you'll begin to panic and to go out there and get the wrong one. So here are some, they mention, you know, some of the reasons that cause women to stay in bad relationships. So let me ask your opinion on these, okay?
Okay.
One is that they believe that he will change. What do you think about that?
Yep. Always living on hope that tomorrow will be better. And sometimes, you know, sometimes relationships can improve. I'm not going to say they don't. But in my case, I kept living on hope that tomorrow would be better. My tomorrow never came. And I sat around for 10 years, and that was 10 years too long.
And I think that for in our situation, I mean, this article, of course, was written for straight women in relationships with straight men. But, you know, I think that's such a key thing that women, you know, even in the chat room tonight, we were having this conversation that, you know, it's so hard to believe this, even when you see it, even when you know it. It's still so surreal. You don't want to believe this. And that's true. You don't, because it's the most horrific of all things that can happen in a marriage. Because once you know your husband is gay, it's not like other kinds of infidelity. Not that I think that that matters much either. But, you know, it's a totally different situation because there is no such thing as he will change.
Mm-hmm.
He won't change. He can't change. He is who he is. And you have to deal with it and accept it, and then you have to take care of the problem, right?
Mm, I agree.
Okay, here's another reason they stay. He pays my bills.
Mm.
You know, now
yeah.
that's a possibility, too. We have women who tell us they can't afford to leave. They're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell them in that situation, Misty?
Well, that's such a hard one, especially if, you know, I've dealt with women before that have had health issues and their health insurance is completely through their husband, and you know what a nightmare that can be, especially trying to find health insurance on your own if you've not been employed. It can be an absolute nightmare. And just absolutely depending on being financially dependent on their husband can be a nightmare sometimes. And then especially when, you know, I've worked with a lot of women, both of them have been professionals, and then they've decided that, or both of them have worked in, you know, just different, various different types of jobs and professions, and then they've decided to, you know, start having children to have their family, and the mom stay home, raise the children. Well, mom's been out of the workforce for a while, and then she discovers the head's gay. I mean, it's a nightmare. You know, and she's just financially dependent. And there's lots of different ways, depending. You know, some of the women I've worked with can get financial maintenance during divorce, you know, or after divorce. And some can't. You know, it depends on the state you're in. And it really, it takes, I always tell women, line your ducks up, get everything in a row before you go through anything. And by that, see an attorney in your state, see what your options are, see what you can do, and go from there.
That's one issue, and also I was going to mention that, let's say you say you can't leave because he pays the bills and you don't have any money coming in, then take advantage of the fact that if you're still there, go to school, take a course, take something where you can earn a living. You don't have to go for a four-year college degree. I mean, you can go for, you know, individual certificate programs, or you can go for, you know, vocational training, right?
There's so many, absolutely, there's so many, I was reading a career article the other day. There are tons of vocational schools out there and vocational programs that pay more than people that have master's degrees. You know, so in a vocational program, it's usually shorter than a four-year degree or a six-year degree. So absolutely, go to your unemployment office, see what you can find out, see, you know, check on any type of educational program, or, you know, go to a local community college, go to a local vocational school, you know, just look for information, a local community library, see what you can find, see what funds are there, get, you know, get yourself educated, get yourself in a position to where you can earn yourself a living.
And what's interesting, you know, is that at the point where I split up with my ex-husband, you know, I had two little babies, and it was such a calculated risk because I had no income. We had no money between us. We were renting a house. We didn't have a home. And we were behind on every single bill. And, you know, I had a week to turn my head around because I didn't realize he was going to come back in a week. I just thought it's going to be over, and I have to now go into survival mode. And I literally had to go on welfare for 3 years. And that was going back to 1982. And I stayed on welfare for 3 years, during which time, know, I used to sneak to school because, you know, you weren't allowed to go. The philosophy back then was if you can go to school, you can work. And I really had no workable skills. I only worked in, you know, in a bakery for a few years. So I couldn't support a family on that. And I wanted to be able to have a chance to give my children something, you know, a life and a possibility of having at least a secure life.
Mm-hmm.
So I did sneak to school. I did an accelerated program in college. Then I did my master's program. And by that time, was able to teach. And, you know, so I pulled my life together, but for 3 years it was hell. And yet it was such a less hell than living in a situation that's abusive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how bad it was, I mean, we didn't have a lot of stuff. We were eating, you know, spaghetti and, you know, a lot of other things, chicken and, you know, ground beef. I'd really made it stretch. You know, it was really hard going to thrift stores and buying their clothes there. You know, some days I didn't even have shoes that weren't torn and broken. But I was determined that I was going to give those children a better life. So, you know, I did it. So if you're staying at home because you feel you can't pay the bills, at least if that's your reason for staying, then take advantage of it and go to school and learn something so you can be independent. Okay, here's the next one. Now, this is something that you always hear women say, Misty, and it just really kind of upsets me. I'm used to him, and I know him better than the devil. I know how bad things are, but if he's not here, I don't know, somebody worse could come.
I'm going to be me. In my case, I think I was married to the devil's brother. But anyway, you know, that goes back to fear of the unknown. And I can understand that. I was afraid of the unknown. But I just built up those little steps. And each little win I had was just so much greater than what I was looking back at behind me. And each little step built up my confidence that much more. And the unknown was so much greater than what the known was. And that's where you just have to use your faith. You know, you got to step out there in faith, knowing that life has to be better, knowing that you deserve a great life, and knowing that, you know, happiness just doesn't arrive at your doorstep. Sometimes you got to go out there and find it and just step out in faith and know that you're going to be okay. Times may not be easy. You know, I forget sometimes how hard it was going through that time. But you got to take that leap of faith.
You have to if you want to have any kind of life for yourself. Now, this next one is a reality, you know, for women in our support situation. Here's another reason, and this is a reality. He has infected me with an incurable disease, so who will want me now? And that's a terrible fear, you know, that we were talking about that in our support chat tonight. You know, some of our women have the legacy left behind of being married to a gay man through having HIV, through having herpes, through having other sexually transmitted diseases that will be there forever. That's the gift that their husbands bestowed upon them. And it really changes their whole mental state knowing this. Because, you know, it's so hard to find a man who wants to go into a relationship with you if you're honest and tell them you're infected.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with
that's a sad reality. That's something we've worked with a lot of women on. And it's quite common in the population we work with. And not just in their population, it's common in the straight world, too. Like the last guest we had, I was shocked with this number she came up with. You have sex with one person, and that person has sex with, on average, of maybe three people before they meet you, and it's what, on average, you've had sex with 60-some people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's 60-some
shocking. People, you have the possibility of bringing whatever they were carrying to that relationship
and
with you.
Think of the odds. That is, I just cannot get that number out of my head. That's shocking. I mean, I knew it was huge, but I just didn't realize how huge it was. And I think sleeping with three people is conservative in this day and age when you're looking at partners.
You were saying five people, and I think that's conservative.
And,
five,
you know.
Five people in a week. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's just a sad reality. I mean, I know there's some support groups out there that for couples that are planning on getting together to go to support groups such as that, you know, for precautions, for protection, and, you know, to educate yourself. And that's the key, you know, educate yourself. Some things you can take medication for.
Mm-hmm. I think that people are careless, you know, and I think I was guilty of that also. I mean, not in the recent years, but, you know, in my younger mm-hmm. years. You know, first of all, when I was 18 years old or living in California, you know, I had contracted STDs. Back
mm-hmm.
in the 1960s, it was not, you know, anything that unusual. You go to a clinic, they do a test, you know, you'd be standing there with 500 people. Then you would notify the people that you had sex with, and then you take medicine, and you were fine, and then you go back and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like a self-perpetuating wheel of, you know, contracting sexually transmitted diseases. But, you know, in this day and age, you know, back then we weren't dying from them. In this day and age, people, since AIDS, you know, it's a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But today you see how people are living with HIV. So now people aren't that scared anymore because they think, oh, well, I'll just take some pills and I'll feel better. And like Darlene was saying, it's just not a matter of taking pills and feeling better. You know, she's trying to live through each day, even with those pills.
Mm.
You know, but I think people just take chances. You know, they get caught up in the moment and they're not thinking with their heads. They're thinking with their bodies. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. They're not thinking with their mind whatsoever. They're thinking with their sexual urges. And they're going through with it, and then it's too late. Once you fall through with that unprotected sex, it's too late once you have contracted an STD. Some STDs you can get cured, some can't. Some are lethal. Some you're going to pay for life. They're not necessarily lethal, but they can make you sterile. They can do all kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's just you have to really be careful and educate yourself. Go to the health department. I mean, you can really educate yourself so well at the health department. They do a lot of free testing at local health departments. And, you know, it's just really uncalled for to get, you know, to not get yourself tested for HIV and things like that these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the next one that, you know, gets me very upset, but here it is. I have a child or children with him. Let me stay for their sake.
Hmm. Yeah.
So let me repeat this again for people because, you know, I always tell you that the most ridiculous thing is to stay together for the sake of the children. If you have a broken marriage, then there's no chance that those children are going to grow up and have the quality of family life with their parents. You know, if parents aren't getting, you know, along with each other and there's a lot of oppression, and, you know, there's just no affection in the home. You know, children internalize this, they blame themselves, they think, well, it's my fault, that's why my parents aren't happy. You know, they go through so much anguish over this. So, it's, you know, to stay together for the sake of the children, to me, is just an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look around you and you see families where there's dysfunctional children, you can be sure that, you know, they come from dysfunctional homes.
Mm-hmm.
And how many women say to us, well, I don't say anything to my children. I keep it a secret. Okay, mm-hmm. So you're crying at night and you think they don't know it?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're depressed during the day. You think they don't know that? So just because you're not talking about it doesn't mean they don't know something's wrong. Children are so perceptive and, you know, they're going to hear things you say to your husband. They're going to say things, you know, listen to what he's saying to you. And, you know, even if you don't have a direct fight in front of them, they are aware of what's going on. So that's, to me, the worst reason to stay is for the sake of the children. You know, children don't need to come from a broken home. You know, it's better to come from a broken home than be in a broken home, as they say.
Absolutely, because children learn to repeat those relationship patterns. And that's the type of relationship they're going to learn how to have. They're going to pick out a mate, and not saying that, you know, they're going to pick out a, you know, to be in a gay, straight relationship, but they're going to pick out a mate that... they're going to repeat those same patterns of unavailability, maybe not being loved. They're going to repeat those patterns in their relationships when they grow up, become adults, and pick out their partner.
Right. It's what I call the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you syndrome, where
mm-hmm.
whatever they see going on in their house, they're going to repeat it in their own relationships. Yep. And, you know, it always amazes me when I talk to parents, men and women, who come from, you know, broken marriages, and then their children get into a bad relationship and they say, oh, how could she even, you know, consider him? Why is she even going with him? Why, you know, he's not good enough for her. Okay, well, is your relationship any different or better? You know, it's like, you know, you come from parents who stick together no matter what, no matter how horrible it is and how much they don't belong together. And that's the role modeling the children do. And I know that the tiebreaker for me, when women come to me and they say, you know, they're not sure about their husbands or how could they leave them, I give them one question. And once I give them this question, it seems like I say to change everything around. I say to them, first, if you have a daughter, and if they don't, I say, how about a sister? And if they don't, how about a close friend? So finally, usually I get somebody they have. But usually with a daughter, and I say to them, if your daughter comes to you one day and says to you, Mom, I'm marrying a man who's just like Daddy, how would you feel about it? And once they realize how horrified they would feel, I say, well, if it's not good enough for your children, why is it good enough for you?
Mm-hmm.
If you wouldn't want them living in that kind of a relationship, why are you living in it? You know, and then all of a sudden it starts to make sense. So that's usually my guideline for women.
Yeah.
Well, the next one says that I can't feed the kids, care for them, nor educate them. So that goes back to what we were talking about before about get yourself some education. How about I feel obligated because he's done so much for me, like he's bought me a car, a house, he's done things for me. What about that one, Miss Faye? Feeling obligated.
Obligated. Well, that's such a strange word in terms of relationship. I think both obligated, you're also obligated if you're married, and if you look at marriage the way I look at marriage, you both obligate to the vows you take, and that's to trust, love, honor, and all those things with each other. When you break those, what obligation do you have?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, seriously, when you have the main core values that are broken in a relationship, I don't know why you owe someone something. I mean, you always owe people respect. It's wonderful if someone can, you know, split up in a respectful, you know, amicable way. That is wonderful. It's ideal, especially if there's children involved. But that doesn't always happen. But, you know, in terms of obligation, you know, everyone has the right to freedom. Everyone has the right to happiness and joy.
Right, that's the only obligation you should feel, is to be happy for yourself.
Yeah, that's such
Scared of starting another relationship because the next guy might be worse than him?
Well, that's why you seek professional help, so you don't repeat patterns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think any time after you end a significant relationship, whether you're married or not married, you know, seek some type of professional help. And it doesn't mean you have mental health issues, you know. Unfortunately, our culture I think it's come a lot better with mental health. But, you know, there's so many different ways to seek mental health now, not just only in therapists. You have life coaches, you have spiritual counselors. There's all sorts of ways to seek mental health now. And
uh-huh.
to help have an emotionally healthy mind. So, you know, seek that healing before you enter any relationship. You know, once you enter a significant relationship, seek healing, whether it be through a spiritual counselor, a life coach, a therapist, whatever it's through, seek that healing.
Now, here's the next one that you'll appreciate. I still love him even if he hits me when he loses his temper or comes home drunk.
I don't know how to respond to that. I mean, you know, you cannot turn love on and off like a light switch. I agree with that. But sometimes you have to love people from a distance, and sometimes you have to make a hard decision. And, you know, if someone is hitting you and hurting you and harming you, that's not what love is all about. That's not an authentic love. That's not a healthy love. And there needs to be some serious changing going on in that relationship.
Well, I think that ties into the next thing here on the list. I still love, okay, He says he still loves me and cares for me. Maybe you can address that.
Well, I'll address that with me. I think my ex-husband loved me as much as he could love me.
Uh-huh.
I think people do love each other. But sometimes as much as people can love each other, it's not good enough. Sometimes these people that are loving us come from such broken homes and have learned about love in such a distorted manner. And when they apply love to us, it's not a true, authentic love. And it's a hurtful love. Love's not painful. Love should not be painful. Love
mm-hmm.
shouldn't hurt. Love shouldn't harm. And it's... when love starts hurting and harming, and it's painful, destroys things, that's just not love. And that doesn't mean that person doesn't love you the best they know how. They may be giving you their best. Sometimes the best is not good enough, and sometimes the best is not healthy. And just because someone loves you doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to have a good relationship with that person.
And I think that's the key point, that most men who abuse their wives, you know, they will shower them with all kinds of love and affection and promises that it will never happen again. And at the moment that they say it, I'm sure they mean it,
mm-hmm.
but it's a sickness and illness, and unless they go to cure it, it's never going to be helped.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure, you know, if it ever can be really cured. I know men who have gone for classes in anger management and anger control because they're in abusive, you know, relationships with women. And it's still, to me, always sitting on a time bomb. And I don't know why a woman would want to do that. You know, I think it's really very frightening to have to live like that with that kind of pressure.
Oh,
in fact, you know, any kind of, like, thing like that. I know a woman, you know, she's in her 60s, and she's, you know, youthful 60s. He's very attractive, and her husband had a mental breakdown, and they never had a great marriage to start with. He was always putting her down, always making her feel insignificant. Well, he really went off the deep end, and, you know, now he not right now, but a few months ago or 6 months ago, he bought a gun, and he was telling people, and he's a guy in his 60s, that he's going to kill his wife and his daughter, and naturally, you know, he had a mental breakdown, but the point is they got him to a mental hospital. And he was, you know, hospitalized, I guess, for about 3-4 weeks. But I wouldn't want to have to walk back into that situation with him that wasn't great to start with, and then have to worry, when's the next breakdown going to be?
Is
he going to get that gun and really shoot me? I mean, he was really determined. He was telling people, I'm going to shoot my wife and my daughter.
Wow.
So you could say, yeah, well, he was sick and he really didn't mean it. But guess what? I don't think I could ever feel safe again, could you?
Wow, a lot of things. You know, I'd have to take the whole situation individually, and because every situation's unique. But I for face value of what you just said, no, I would be very wary of walking back into that situation. I don't think I could.
Right, but here's her answer to me whenever I say that. It's just like on here, he pays my bills. You know, how am I going to survive? You know, I can't work right now. I'm getting disability. You know, so she has all the same excuses here. But, you know, or I still love him. There's a good part of him. You know, it's not all bad. Okay, whatever.
It's not all bad, but that doesn't mean that people are compatible. Even if they love you and you love them, it doesn't mean that you're compatible as a couple.
Now, here's the next one going on to that, Misty, and this is what we hear a lot also. I've already spent the prime time of my life with him, and I'm older now, so let me just stay with him.
Hmm.
We hear women saying that, right?
I do. And, you know,
I'm in my 60s now, I'm in my early 70s. How am I going to start over? I've spent all these years. I might as well just accept it.
I can understand the fear of that, you know, with respect to walk into retirement and it be the, you know, a very fun part of your life, a part of your life with some freedom, you know, possibly some travel, especially if you save money up and, you know, just more of a free schedule to do what you want, to enjoy things. possibly enjoy grandchildren, you know, just whatever life has brought you at that point in time. And then get this big bomb dropped on you that, you know, hey, since gay, you know, it's really scary when you're approaching that because you're already going into a life transition of retirement. That's stressful enough. Even if it's a good thing and you're looking forward to it, that's a life transition. That those can always, you know, lead to some stress.
Uh-huh.
And then death on top of it, you know, my husband's gay. That's major, major, major stress. So, you know, it's scary. It's scary to venture out there at that point in time. But, you know, it's, I say don't look at age in terms of happiness.
I'm going to say something that I think you'll understand where I'm coming from. It's not just a matter of saying, oh, my husband is gay and blah, blah. You know, it's, oh, my husband is gay and he was never meant to be in a straight marriage. So all those fights we used to have and all those things he used to pick on me for and all the things he thought I was doing wrong wasn't because I was actually doing anything wrong, but because he was frustrated because he was married to a woman. That's how he treated me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always say that it takes two to make a marriage, not when there's a gay husband in the mishmash there. Then it only takes one, and it's a gay husband. Because his perception of what marriage is totally different than what a straight man's is. With a gay husband, he's always looking to run away and to avoid having to sleep with his wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a million excuses on why I don't want to have sex with my wife today. Where the only excuse is because he's a gay man.
Yep.
So he's, you know, once again making you feel deflated and he's sitting and knocking you down so you won't want to have sex with him. So it's not just the fact that he had a gay husband, right?
It's not an easy thing to deal with, that's for sure. It's not an easy thing to discover, and it's not an easy thing to deal with.
No, there's a lot more to it than just having a gay husband. Now, here's another really important one that women tell us all the time. If I leave, my family and friends will talk and say, I have failed to keep my marriage. Isn't that a fear that a lot of our women have?
Yeah, I had that fear too. And, you know, finally, you know, I come to realize my family and friends are not married to my ex-husband. You
mm-hmm.
know, I was married to him. They're not. And I was the one that had to be happy. And, you know, some people I will never please. Some people I will never hold the standards that they try to put on me. And you know what? Those people are not usually very happy themselves anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I've got to do what's best for me and my family. And for me at that time, I didn't have children, so it was just me. My family was, you know, a few dogs. So what was best for me and my dogs was the divorce. It was the safest thing. I had to. Or I was looking death in the eyes from the abuse. It was just getting so lethal is the word I guess I should use. Because it was just getting more dangerous by the day. But I had to do what was best for me. And, you know, in one of the classes I took, right when I was starting graduate school, a very smart professor said, you know, what anyone says or thinks of me is none of my business. And I just
mm-hmm.
love that mantra, you know, and I use that often with straight wives. You know, what anyone says or thinks of me is none of my business. So let people talk. They're going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
The people who want to talk, let them talk. They don't have to live your life. They don't have to walk in your shoes. They don't know what goes on behind the bedroom door. They don't know any of the stuff you've had to deal with. They don't
mm-hmm.
know the emotions you've had to deal with to discover that your husband's gay and your heart drop when you find the porn or find the phone numbers or hear the voicemail from the gay lover, you know, all those different things, you know, or the love letters, whatever it is, you know, all the different things that we've heard, you know, the women tell us, you know, when they call us and they're bawling and crying and, you know, the world has ended, you know. They don't have to, you know, the friends and family that are just giving you a hard time, they don't know what that's like emotionally. And especially when you give your all to someone and you love someone and then the bottom's just dropped out from under it and you know it's something you can't fix.
Uh-huh.
So they don't know what that's like. And I just tell the women, you know, anyone says it, thinks of you, it's none of your business. It's none of your business. You just keep going and do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's really what it comes down to. The bottom line is that, you know, these are complicated situations. We don't want to minimize how hard they are. But there are women who survive this, and you have to believe in your heart that you're going to be one of them, that you're going to put your life back on track, that you don't have to live with this anguish and frustration. That life wasn't meant to be this way. It really wasn't.
No.
And I would say that for any woman in any relationship who's not happy. I mean, this wasn't my first marriage, you know, so certainly I was in another bad marriage before this one to my gay husband. So, I mean, I ended that marriage. It wasn't a matter of gay. It was a matter that it was a bad marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, women end marriages all the time. As I mentioned before, about 50% of all marriages end. But we seem to have a much harder time ending ours because we're dealing in such a different, you know, mindset. We're so emotionally beaten down that we're afraid to stand up for ourselves. And your husbands are counting on that, especially the ones that have no intentions of leaving. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that Misty and I will both tell you we don't minimize how serious the situation is. But that's why there's support around and there's help around. And if you need it, you just have to drop me a line. And we're more than happy to set you up with the support that you need. And, you know, we have online support chat 3 times a week to help women connect with each other. You know, I have my monthly newsletters. I have my healing weekends. You know, if you need one-on-one, you know, a pain pal, you know, I set that up all the time with people. We have people all over the country, in Canada, in Australia, in the United Kingdom, you know, who are willing to give support. So it's just a matter of, you know, writing to me and you can find it. And I think that through support, women get stronger. And one of the things I brought up in our chat room tonight before we end, Misty, you know, one of the things that really inspired me about what you do is I said to our women, I said, you know, one of the ways to start healing, of course, it's not going to heal you altogether, but it's certainly a step. And because that's what healing is, it's a bunch of little steps put together.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, we have so many creative women in our group. And, you know, I'm in awe of some of them, you know, like you,
mm-hmm.
Misty. In fact, I was wearing your beautiful necklace that I had from you today.
Oh,
people always stop me, and they always, you know, I wear it like every week. But people always stop me when I'm wearing it. Oh, that's so beautiful. It says, what does it say? And look at these stones. And, you know, when you think how beautiful things are that people create like you and like Maureen, and Wendy with her words, inspiring people. You know, all of our women are talented in different ways, although they may not recognize it. But you can, you know, look to create things, whether it's painting, whether it's writing, whether it's poetry. I have women sending me beautiful poems all the time. You know, creating really makes you feel better about yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
If it's cooking, if it's baking. You know, look at the beautiful cookies you baked at Christmas time, Misty. Oh, yeah, about that time again. But,
I know.
Don't forget me. The thing is that, you know, some women are excellent bakers, excellent cooks. There's all different ways you can be creative. So, you know, I think when you create, you know, it starts to build life from life that's been taken away from you. So think about what you can do to be creative and don't just look at it as artwork. I have no artistic ability, but I can do other things like, I don't know. I can write.
Absolutely.
So I use that for my, you know, to make myself feel better, you know.
Creative outlet.
Yeah, I can write. So I can do that. And a lot of our women are great writers. You know, start writing your story. Someday you may need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or want to have it.
Mm-hmm.
But creating will make you start to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Misty,
it's been a wonderful show. Thank you for all of your input. I do want to mention in 2 weeks we're going to have Dr. Brian Hooper back.
Wonderful.
So I'm really excited about that because he's always such a great guest and very, you know, confirming to our women and validating, right?
He is absolutely wonderful. His philosophy, his demeanor, his insight is just, it's fabulous. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Just really need to tune in. Everyone,
uh-huh.
I learn something every time I listen to him.
Yeah, he's really awesome. So in the meantime, we're going to wish everybody a wonderful week. I'll let you go first, Misty.
Okay. Good night and love to all, and love to you, Bonnie.
And love to you too, Misty. And we'll be back here next week with the Straight Wives Talk Show. Good night, everyone.